Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Can't we be sweethearts? Why don't we fall in love right from the start? You're the girl I'm thinking of. Oh, can't you see? You're the only girl for me.
It is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. Muslim mother who strangled daughter won't be jailed. Canadian judge rules. She strangled a 14-year-old daughter with a scarf. But she won't be jailed because she was misunderstood. Now, we could talk about the several-tier justice system in America that has emerged. Now, you say, well, that's in Canada. How could you say it's here? Well, let's look at something from here. How about this one? Judge, law penalizing fake heroes unconstitutional. Denver, Colorado. A lawsuit brought by the verminous American Civil Liberties Union of Colorado, a subversive group, in my opinion, that should be disbanded by a conservative government and the principals put in jail. The ACLU is a foreign organization, foreign to everything American. The ACLU sued and said that the Stolen Valor Act is fatally flawed. And they shopped it to a verminous judge. And he said that a law that makes it illegal to lie about being a war hero is unconstitutional because it violates free speech. That's right. U.S. District stinker Robert Blackburn, the stench from the bench is making me clench, threw the case out and said the law is unconstitutional. Rick Glenn Stanloff claimed that he was an ex-Marine who was wounded in Iraq and received the Purple Heart and Silver Star. But you see, the military had no record he ever served. And he was charged with violating the Stolen Valor Act, which makes it a crime punishable by up to a year in jail to falsely claim to have won a military medal. But since the ACLU hates the military, since the ACLU hates the police, since the ACLU hates the flag, since the ACLU hates the family, since the ACLU hates the church, since the ACLU hates mother and father, and since especially the vermin in the ACLU hates real heroes, they brought a case on behalf of this rat who says he was a hero and wasn't, and they shopped it to their judge, Robert Blackburn, who threw the case out and said that the law is unconstitutional. Well, I rest my case. The enemy within has won. The enemy within this country is so brazen right now that they would even attack a law as clear as this. So I'd rather not talk about it. Instead, I'm going to talk about the Passion of Mel. Many years ago, there used to be a statement, a joke. It was called A Night with Venus and a Lifetime with Mercury. An old guy told it to me when I was a young guy. I didn't understand it. He had to explain it to me. It was a joke, A Night with Venus, A Lifetime with Mercury. It meant that some men would sometimes be with women who had syphilis, and then they had to be treated with mercury for syphilis. Now, mercury, of course, has been found to be a toxic metal, and it killed many people with neurological disorders. It induced neurological disorders and killed them. And one of the most notable people who died from mercury poisoning was the famous American writer Jack London, who died of mercury poisoning as a result of being treated with mercury. Because he had spent the night with Venus, and he had a lifetime with Mercury until he died. So A Night with Venus, A Lifetime with Mercury used to be the joke. Well, looking at the Mel Gibson situation, we can now say it's A Night with Venus and A Lifetime with Acrimony. Now, although Acrimony is not a planet, it is a universe of strife, and for Mel Gibson, it seems to be a state of being. And I think we should talk a little bit about Mel Gibson going crazy on his girlfriend. And I want to ask women in particular whose side they're on this. There's an interesting article about this that came out from somebody I don't really know. I never heard of them, but it's a hell of an article. And I posted it on michaelsavage.com where she says Michael Savage and Whoopi Goldberg both support Mel Gibson. Michael Savage and Whoopi Goldberg stick up for Mel Gibson. I thought it was a well-written article. I wouldn't have posted it if it was just me and Whoopi Goldberg. I don't particularly care for Whoopi Goldberg's act. I think she's terrible. I think she's a talentless hack. I think she's about as talentless as Obama, frankly. And so, therefore, I've never enjoyed any of her work. I think she got everywhere because of reasons other than her talent or lack thereof. And she's on a show that makes me wretch. But nevertheless, she's a friend of Mel Gibson's, and she knows that there's no question about it that, you know, Mel Gibson was set up. Now, look, let me just say this. The article is well written. Dr. Savage did not condone Gibson's irrational rant. Savage nevertheless expressed a sense of sympathy for a man who appears to be more like a wounded animal who's been betrayed, heartbroken, and set up by an opportunistic young female. Now, I didn't call her an opportunistic young female. I called her a young hoe. But I'm reading from the article, which is written for a different audience. It's a very interesting article. You should read it. And Dr. Savage, it says, once again refuses to be painted into a corner. Unlike many other in the industry, according to millions across America daily, he is a constant voice of reason in a world savaged by absurdity and political correctness. Well, okay, I thought it was well written. I don't know who this person is, but we're going to have her on the show. And it was written by who? Michael Savage and Whoopi Goldberg stick up for Mel Gibson. Where's the author of this, Beowulf? Who's the woman who wrote this article? Well, anyway, what do you think about the story? Why is the author not on this article? One would tend to think that these two individuals would never be on the same side. Dr. Savage, a famous conservative radio talk show host, by the way, recently banned in England, absurdly in the minds of many, is the author of multiple number one bestsellers, including Liberalism as a Mental Disorder, The Enemy Within, and The Savage Nation. Dr. Savage has millions of followers who tune in daily, blah, 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 eagerly awaiting his take on the most crucial issues that face America today. He does it in a unique way, unabashed by political correctness, striking a chord that millions respond to, finding strength in his beliefs, borders, language, and culture. However, with Mel Gibson's most recent troubles recorded by his Russian hoe, a ranting and raving Gibson seemingly leaves very little room for doubt about certain sensibilities. On today's radio show, however, Savage came on Gibson's defense, sort of. And so that's where we're at today. What do you think? Whose side are you on here? Gibson or the hoe? That's all. I mean, I'm going to make it very simple because America has made up its mind. Are you on? Because I think you should listen to some of the tapes. Start with tape two.
Stay on this phone and don't hang up for me. I have plenty of energy to drive over there. You understand me? And I will. So just listen to me. Listen to my ranting. Listen to what you do to me.
I didn't do anything to you.
A pain in the ass.
You are ruining my life.
You make my life so difficult.
Well, you know what? It's
you be a woman that supports me instead of a woman that sucks off me. And just sucks me dry. Get out of this relationship if you're a good woman and you love me.
What?
I don't believe you anymore.
What did you say?
Think of your has any relationship ever worked with you? No!
Well, you know, what are you going to make a joke about the guy? The guy's in like a death agony there. It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare to listen to it. It's alcohol talking. The man's heart was broken by the hoe who set him up, in my humble opinion. She set him up from day one. She got the meal ticket with the baby, and that's all she needed. She did the leg lock, and that was the end of the road. I mean, the guy threw away a lovely wife of, I don't know how many, 30 years. I don't count. I'm not into the celebrity thing. And he threw it away for the Hollywood starlet. And here it is, 2 years later, 2-3 years later. Look where he is now. If this is not a biblical story, I'd like to know what is. As I said to you yesterday, I'll say it again today. In the bigger picture, this is a story for all of us. It's a story of what happens when you let your passions rule you. And we're all subject to our passions. In this case, it's a normally understood passion. Older man, younger woman, leg lock, baby. Lawyer hell. That's all. But the things he said to her, don't be a liar. You never said a thing like that in your life. You never heard of a thing like that said to anybody in rage. You never said it. I don't believe you. I don't believe people listening to the show. They never heard words like that before. That's number one. Is it nice to listen to? It makes me sick. Shocking to listen to these words. But on the other hand, I have to say, she was setting him up. I heard the voice. The louder he got, the quieter she got. Every time she became quiet and like, what did I do? I did nothing. I love you. I'm a nice woman. I did very nice woman. Breast job. Tush job. Diamond. Prada. Very good. I do for you. And then it was over. He would go crazy again. So how can you take... So I'd like to hear from women in particular. I think women are better at this than men. The men will all take the side of Gibson unless they're gay. Gay men are going to attack Gibson, I think. I think unless gay men are listening, they would be on the Gibson side. I don't really know. I don't know how gay relationships work, but it must be something like this. I mean, a relationship is a relationship. You put aside gay or straight. Okay, let's start with that. There's still human jealousy involved. And there's heartbreak involved, right or wrong. So, okay, it's open to women and gays, not normal heterosexual clods. I'll be right back.
Oh, little girl.
I love Fridays on the Savage Nation. No matter what the ACLU does to me, no matter what Obama does to America, I still like Fridays. What can I do? It still symbolizes a weekend. I mean, I'm not really a factory worker, but, you know, it's still Monday to Friday, TGIF. I mean, there's a certain liberation on Friday. You work for the government or you collect a check from the government. Everyone else supports them. So that's our show. So we're talking about, you know, why are you talking about this instead of talking about politics or, you know, Iran? Because this is of a human interest. This is of human interest, this A Night with Venus and a Lifetime with Moscow. You know what I'm saying? It's like that. It's like A Night with Venus, A Lifetime with the Ukraine. Florida, Fran, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I just wanted to say that I somewhat blame Mel Gibson for his problems.
I do, too. After all, he did it. A, he left his wife, and B, he picked this Hollywoho.
Yes, and, you know, he had been sober a long time. And if you've been to AA and know, you're supposed to be on top of that. You really can't stay in denial to yourself.
And I've never been in recovery. I'm the only person I know who's never been in recovery.
Yeah, but
I don't go for recovery. I just drink, and I can control my drinking. That's the difference.
Yeah, and he can. It's a disease, and you need to leave.
It is. I could argue this both ways, but I tried as such in order to qualify for Medicare, Medicaid, and the environment. And have people pick up the tab and create sympathy for a drunk. I think that if you want to kick alcohol, you can do it on your own. Otherwise, forget it. No one's ever going to get you off the boot. AA is wonderful, but all of the rest of this treatment crap, it's all up to the person.
It is, but he let himself slip. You can't.
Well, I agree. That's right. Ultimately, it's a failure of his own willpower, if you want to put it that way. His own character weakness. As I mentioned to you, and I'm not boasting, when I was given the opportunity to review The Passion of Christ, remember when it was coming out, I went and watched it in his screening room with him in Beverly Hills. I don't know where it was, Century City, wherever. He was a very nice guy. I invited him for a drink afterwards. It was him and I. He was looking for media support, and he got it. I said, why don't you come over and have a drink? He said, I don't drink. I said, I understand that. Well, then he went on the, he fell off the wagon up there on the Coast Highway with the whole anti-Semitic rant now, the Russian woman thing. So what are you going to do? We're a society that seems to forgive murderers, we have sympathy for terrorists, but what, we don't have sympathy for Mel Gibson because he made a movie about Jesus?
Well, she said
that's why the media is attacking him, is because he made a movie about Jesus and it was such a hit, and he bypassed the whole studio system. He bypassed the entire mafia in Hollywood. He did it on his own. He distributed it himself. He made a fortune, and he proved he could do it without those gangsters. Okay, so they never forgave him. And I'll give you a comparison. We're going to play for you in a moment a tape by another Hollywood type named Alec Baldwin, a complete left-wing lunatic, a maniac. A maniac of the left, Alec Baldwin, who went off on his 14-year-old daughter a couple of years ago saying things to her that were appalling, perhaps not as appalling. But let me tell you something. Saying things like Alec Baldwin said to a daughter, to me, was about as equal to what Mel Gibson said to the girlfriend, okay? So here's what I want to ask you. Why did Alec Baldwin walk away from it unscathed? In fact, his career rose. What did the boys at at his agency say you did a good job on that girl of yours, Alec? How come Alec Baldwin went up and Mel Gibson's about to be, why are they trying to put a knife in him? The answer is politics, because Alec Baldwin is a certifiable America hater, in my opinion. And Gibson is a patriot. Remember, Gibson made movies that are patriotic, not only The Passion of Jesus. Remember We Were Soldiers Once and Young? Remember that movie? What a great movie about the Battle of the Yadrang Valley. Remember that movie? To this day, when I watch it, I get chills up my spine. Every movie the guy has made, he plays heroic figures. But heroic figures are flawed in real life as well as in fiction. Heroes are flawed, so he's flawed. What do you want to do, flay him because he's flawed? That's all. So that's why I say to you, you know, America is talking about this. Whose side are you on, the Hollywood Ho or Mel Gibson? You know, I'll tell you, I play the next Mel Gibson piece, clip three. Let's hear three.
You need medication.
What?
You need medication.
I need a woman! Not a little girl with a dysfunctional... I need a woman. I don't need medication. You need a bat in the side of the head. All right? How about that? You need a doctor. You need a brain transplant.
You hear that? So, which one was this? That's clip four, right? That's the four. He needs a medication. He says, no, I need a woman. Well, in some cases, you could have medication and a woman. You just take Viagra. But that's not what we're talking about here. I don't think she was saying you need Viagra. Do you think she was saying he needs medication? That was the whole problem? And she says, you need medication? Now, look, if a woman that just jilted you speaks to you in that calm tone and says you need medication, you'd go insane. You go crazy. I don't care what your background is, rich, poor, race doesn't matter, sexual orientation doesn't matter. If the lover who jilted you does this in a calm, provoking manner, you're going to go berserk. But why was she recording him? Why was she recording him? To blackmail him. Everybody could understand that. This is blackmail. I think she should be arrested.
Savage.
I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill. On Blueberry
Hill. I found my thrill.
When I found you.
What a sweet voice this man has. I loved him when I was a kid. Fats Domino. I wish him well. So we're talking about Mel Gibson versus the Hollywood Ho. And I'm asking you which side you're on. And, you know my position already. So I just got slammed. Here's an email I got from somebody I respect, a woman, who says, Savage, you're wrong. He is a stone-cold alcoholic. This has happened to him before. He is an ugly, disgusting drunk. He used Jesus to make a fortune. There is no honor in his film, in my opinion. He exploited Christians. Ooh, take no prisoners. Roar. Wow. Ooh. Oh, yeah, that didn't come from Mary, let me tell you. When I say Mary, I mean from the Bible. I mean, but the fact of the matter is, I think that a lot of people believe what that email just said, the same thing. They won't call the show. They're afraid that I'll get mad at them. I'm not going to get mad. I don't care what side you take, frankly. It's called an opinion show, so whatever your opinion is your opinion. Right? So let's have one more Mel Gibson, the next one. Go ahead.
I don't give a damn about my music, and I don't give a damn about you spending another penny. I'm saving her life.
Yo, you're awful angry for this.
You almost killed us. Did you forget?
Last 3 years is gravy
train. You were hitting a woman with a child in her hands. You, what kind of man is that? Hitting a woman when she's holding a child in her hand, breaking her teeth twice in the face. What kind of man is that?
You're all angry now.
You're going to get to it. You know what?
Okay, let's stop right there. That was inserted. Michael's humble opinion, and I don't work for the CIA, that was inserted by the lawyers. Whoever the lawyer is in this, I'd like to see the name. I can't wait to see the name of the lawyer who's going to come forward, the vampire. In my estimation, an expert at reading these kinds of things, whatever they call them, can easily see whether or not, rather determine on a screen whether or not that was inserted, because it's a different voice than follows, by the way. Listen to that part again. Could you just rewind the tape? Make believe you're in a CIA room where they listen to criminals, okay? Just
you were hitting a woman with a child in her hands. You, what kind of men is that? Hitting a woman when she's holding a child in her hand, breaking her teeth twice in the face. What kind of men is that?
No, you're all angry now.
You're going to get to, you know what? You're going to answer one day, boy, you're going to answer.
Huh?
Bet.
What? What?
Nothing, nothing. I'm not the one to threaten.
I'm threatening. I'll put you in a rose garden, you. You understand that? Because I'm capable of it. You understand
in
that?
A rose garden? I don't know what he means by put her in a rose garden. I guess that's a bodily threat. I mean, let's be clear. It's a bodily threat. It's illegal. But by the way, that is illegal, whether she was set up or setting him up or not. It is illegal. I'm sorry. There's the, you know, you threaten somebody like that, that's bad. That's bad news. I don't care what you're on. I don't care who you are. You can't say I'm going to put you in a rose garden. And by the way, boys and girls, if you don't know it by now, when you talk on a telephone, always assume you're being recorded. I don't care who you're speaking to. I don't care what the conversation is about. Whatever you're saying, in the back of your head, just say to yourself, do I really want to say this? Because I must assume it's being recorded by somebody. You know, you go back in time to the gangster movies. Remember, they would always call on a payphone in the days when there were payphones, right? And then you realize that men speak cryptically who are in dangerous businesses or criminal enterprises. They don't say what they're going to do unless they're crazy. And so obviously the man is imbalanced, number one, and he lost it, number two. But he did commit there's an element of a crime here. I don't know what the level of crime is, you know. Whether or not you have sympathy for him, it doesn't matter. She baited him, but he went for the bait. It's like, let's say you're in a restaurant or a bar, and you get into a heated argument, and you're a guy with another guy. And he provokes you, and you say, I'm going to kill you. I think that's a crime. I think it's called battery. There's assault, and there's battery. I understand you could be arrested for battery, which is threatening bodily injury. Do you know that? He just threatened bodily injury, unless he was going to, you know, talk, okay, I went to Orchard Supply Hardware, and I was going to buy you a rose garden, put you in a rose garden, meaning I love you so much, I was going to buy you a rose garden. You could interpret it that way. He said he's capable. I mean, come on, you know, if you're a lawyer, you could do a lot of things with words. The next best thing to being a lawyer is to be a politician. And the next thing better than being a politician is you can go up the scale of how you can parse words. Anyway, that's it. What do you want to go on and on about this? Yes, let's go on and on about it. The day would not complete, be not complete, on this Friday, unless we talked about the British Petroleum capping the well. Oh, that's really, that's got some Q factor. You want me to go from the Mel Gibson Hollywoho thing to the Obama's press conference on the BP oil cap? Let's hear clip 8. I'll let you decide what you want to talk about. Go ahead.
As we all know, a new cap was fitted over the BP oil well earlier this week. Right. This larger, more sophisticated cap was designed to give us greater control over the oil flow as we complete.
All right, fine. I'm glad it's capped, but truthfully, what can you say about it? You stood in the way as long as you could. You put one oil driller out of business, and now it's capped. It's like a bad dentist. You know, he caps your teeth after you lose it. So let's go back to Gibson, New York, WOR. Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mike, I just want to bring a different perspective to this, is that nobody's talking about this. Mel Gibson, right around the time that he was having this trouble with this woman, he lost his agent, Ed LaMotto, of 30 years. This guy plucked him out of obscurity, protected him, made him a star, was like a father to him. The second point I'd like to make is that in this recording...
Hold on. You have your time sequence off. These tapes were released last Monday. The agent died the very next day or that night, and then he was fired by the CAA the next day when the agent was no longer there. I want to remember, there's very political element here. Do you know who the chief of Creative Artists Agencies is who fired him? Ari Emanuel... Rahm Emanuel's brother. Does America know that?
No, they don't know that, but we do. I understand that. But his agent had been suffering for at least 6 months prior, and he knew that this was going to happen. And I think that really did something to him.
Oh, in other words, the Hollywoho and the lawyers were trying to extort Gibson for 6 months, and the agent was protecting him.
Absolutely.
And he knew it was too. It wasn't gonna. The protection wasn't gonna work, and he died. You're saying from the stress.
Why, when he said, "You know, I'm going broke," is what he meant was, I really believe this, is that he's not gonna no longer have these roles because it's gonna be very tough for him now. His agent's dead. Nobody's gonna want to touch him.
And it's wait. Did his agent create the role of Jesus?
No. But his agent made the deals, and he had the connections to get that through.
Yeah, but Mel produced it himself with his own company. Hollywood wouldn't touch it because it's filled with anti-Christians. It's filled with Christophobes in Hollywood. So they didn't touch the movie. He didn't even distribute it through the Hollywood channels. As I understand it, it went through independent distribution channels.
Yeah, but his agent did help him with preparing the financing for it.
I don't know the ins and outs of it, but Gibson bypassed the whole studio system. He made the movie himself, and he went to churches, and he promoted it through churches, and he made a big hit, and they never forgave him for it because he bypassed the Hollywood mafia.
I agree.
All right. So, see, I'm not going to bring myself into it. I'm not in the movie business. I never will be. But I've had somebody who's wanted to do the Michael Savage story as a documentary, for years now. I've talked about it on the show. See, he said to me, we can get it into at least 700 theaters without Hollywood being involved. I said, how? Because he said there's at least 600 to 700 independent theaters who will take that film if it's good. Because they know you have an audience of 8 to 10 million. They know that a certain percentage of them are going to go to the movies. And then there's people who know about you from the band in Britain. You're going to have the curious who never listened to you go. So it's an automatic 10 million person, $10 ahead, $100 million movie. They told me that. And the movie could be produced for like $4 or $5 million, the documentary. I mean, so they see money, they smell money, they know it could happen. So I don't need CAA. I don't need any of them to do this movie. And I may do it. I may do it one day. I'm not ready to do it now. But I'm saying you can bypass Hollywood just as you could bypass other industries, even in this day and age. You know what I'm saying? 1-800-449-8255. You want to go on to something else? You want to talk about this? You want to talk about that? There is other news. I mean, there's not that exciting other news. This is more exciting, for example, than the BP oil cap, which is very important. But this has, I think, an emotional element to it that the American people are involved with. Because when you hear these tapes, you get drawn into this. I think we missed one of them, didn't we miss one? And we exploited them all already. Oh, okay. Let's exploit tape three.
You need medication.
What?
You need medication.
No, you play. Stop. You played that. That's four. Play three.
You have no soul. You can't give a f-. I left my wife because we had no spiritual common ground. You and I have none. Zero. You won't even try.
You just enjoy insulting me. That's all.
Well, you know, at that point, if you don't hear a man who's ill, I don't know what it would take for you to understand that you're dealing with a man who is sick at this point. You have to have compassion. I am sorry. If you don't see a man, you know, this, it's like life imitating art. It's strange here. It's strange. Maybe this observation is off the wall, but it's almost as though he is in his own way. And please, I know I'm going to get slammed for this again. I don't know where I'm going to be banned next, but it's as though he crucified himself. He sounded like Jesus being crucified, but in this case, he was crucified by his own activities. You know what I'm saying? The man sounds like he was crucified at this point by this Hollywood ho. And by his own emotions, and by the booze, and by the fact that he threw his life away, and it all flooded into his head. You know, you think about life, what can happen to you. You know, there's a saying from the teachings of the fathers that says a man can spend his whole life building up his reputation, and he can lose it in 1 minute with one act. Now, you know, you think about those admonitions of the Bible, a biblical era. Think about that one. A man can spend his entire life building up his reputation and in one act lose it. It keeps you in line. You know, everyone should worry about that. That's right. Everyone should keep a little eye over themselves, like the eye in the sky over yourself, and say, do I really want to do this? Do I want to take that step over there? Because, hey, what if something XYZ happens? Man, my life is thrown in the garbage. I think we all have to think about that with virtually everything we do. So anyway, here's almost an example, as I say to you. This is a tragedy of the highest order in the sense of a human tragedy. I don't mean it's the equivalent of an earthquake in Haiti, but it is the tragedy of one man. Forget Gibson, forget actor. Let's take man, woman, let's take human, human. Here's a human being whose life has melted away before his eyes. How did it happen? He started to drink again. His eyes, he followed his eyes. And what does the Bible say about that? Do not let thine eyes deceive you. You read the Bible. I'm talking the Old Testament. I read it all the time. And believe me, my eyes deceive me plenty because I'm a human being like you and I'm frail. But it says, do not let thine eyes deceive you. Do not let thy heart deceive you. I don't want to preach to you. So you say, well, what's left? Well, okay, it's the old joke again. Everything I like is either illegal, immoral, or fattening. That was a sign that used to be in everyone's finished basement when I was a kid in Queens. Remember the age of the finished basement, remember? If you were rich, you had a finished basement. If you were not rich, you had an unfinished basement. What was a finished basement? The guy next to you with an attached house spent money on knotty pine, and they put in like a flimsy bar with lights. And then they put little corny signs, and I love that. Generation of men were fabulous. And amongst the signs were things such as that, as I said to you. What did I just say the sign said? I forgot already. I'm drawing a blank on it. They're not listening. The people who worked for me went to sleep on this. You forgot you are lit. What were you doing in there that you can't remember what I said? How come if I can't remember what I say and you can't remember what I say, how can the audience remember what I just said? What did I just say? Does anyone know what I just said? All right, we can move. I can't remember what I said. It means you don't know what I just said. It's a sign. What did that sign say? Beowulf, you're going to get really in trouble for this. Doug, you didn't hear it either? You were asleep too? It's right. All right. All right, look, we got to lighten this up a little bit, right? Does anyone have compassion for the Hollywood ho? Does anyone think she's a victim? Does anybody think she was the poor girl who came over from a poor nation and she thought she was going to be rescued by this man and she was heartbroken to find out that she was exploited by him? Sarasota, Florida, Lynn, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael. You know what? One thing in particular, the word says that the tongue is an unruly evil, and to control it requires great vigilance. And when you tap liquor onto it,
ooh,
it's extremely challenging.
Yeah, well, look at the business I am in. Do you know that I never had a drink on the air but once or twice, and I did it 5 minutes before the end of the show to see what it would do for me? It so destroys your ability to form a thought and keep it coherent that I never, ever drank on the air. It was an experiment. Do you know that?
I remember hearing that particular clip when you were sharing when I was on my travels somewhere. You know, he's under great pressure, and he adverts to liquor currently. Emotions
right.
are great, yet when they're out of control, it causes great problems. Then tap it with liquor. But I believe, like Mel, like everybody, when you consume too much liquor, you speak what you are really thinking from the depth of your heart.
So do I. I have heard it said, and this is interesting. I've studied alcoholism once. There are nice drunks, there are mean drunks. And I was told that people who are nice when they're drunk, and people who are mean when they're drunk. Is that what you're saying?
Overall, yes. But I think the issue is they never really solved the issues that they had amongst each other in a straight form. And he is reverting to alcohol, and this is not an excuse for Mel. But what I'm saying is her being divisive by recording him, I think that was divisive. And I'm not saying that Mel was right on with this whole situation, but the liquor played a huge role. But also she, by recording, was in her best frame of mind. And you know what? I'm sure if you took the recording off and they sat together and you would hear their conversations without the recording on, I'm sure she was at just as much fault. I think it's a communication breakdown, and I think alcohol obviously destroys many a relationship.
That's right. It destroys people from top to bottom, and there are people who can drink and even get tipsy, and they're not alcoholic, and then there are people who cannot have even one drink, and they are alcoholic. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Love me. Yeah.
What did
relationship ever worked with you? No!
Oh, let's stop it already. This is not fun anymore. At this point, it's just agony. It's the agony of a soul. It is almost like the passion of Jesus in a way. I know you say, well, how can it be? Because, if you look at the story of Jesus, it's about suffering, isn't it? Now you say, well, how can you compare suffering for righteousness with suffering for a man who's suffering because of his own weaknesses? Because suffering is suffering. It doesn't really matter why you suffer. The point is that there's a universal element of suffering that binds all mankind. And that is what should unite us, not divide us. Suffering is what should make us understand that the most distant stranger is really our brother, in the sense that he can suffer the same way we can. I don't want to get too preachy. This is an interesting one. Isaiah was the like really mean in a way. He was really pissed off. So Isaiah says, say to the seers, he says, for it is a rebellious people, lying children, children that refuse to hear the teaching of the Lord, that say to the seers, see not, and to the prophets, prophesy not unto us right things. Speak unto us smooth things, prophesy delusions. How's that one? Speak unto us smooth things, prophesy delusions. There are people out there who say to me, speak to us smooth things, prophesy delusions. And I say, no, I don't trust in oppression and perverseness. And so therefore, in that regard, I'm an Old Testament man living in a modern world. And so when I listen to a story like this, I see a universal tragedy.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is Rock and Roll Friday in the Savage Nation. See how quiet I can be? You know what I notice on radio when I listen to Mexican music or such? They're still into like the 50s and they think they have to scream. You know, mas, 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 del brucho show, gracias, blah, blah, blah. That's what a lot of people do in radio to this day, even in talk radio. They think you have to scream and yell like Clarabelle with a horn. You don't have to do it. You don't have to scream if you got something to say. You have to scream if you have nothing to say. But at times I will yell. I'm not yelling much anymore. I don't have to because I really can make my points without it. So we're talking about Gibson Gate right now on the Savage Nation because you don't want to talk about the judge has said that the law penalizing fake heroes is unconstitutional as a result of the vermin in the ACLU who said the Stolen Valor Act is fatally flawed. That's because nobody in the ACLU is a hero. They're all anti-hero vermin, anti-American scum. Everyone in the ACLU should be arrested for sedition, their assets seized unto the third generation, and they should be deported to England where they belong. So that's why we should be talking about Gibson. You want to talk about AntennaGate now with the iPhone? I don't even own one. Why does anyone care about the iPhone and AntennaGate when we could talk about Mel versus the Hollywood Ho or the signs that used to be on the bars in the finished basements that said everything I like is either illegal, immoral, or fattening? I actually thought about it. That's shockingly prescient. The old men of my father's generation, when they had a finished basement, I was trying to say in the last hour, they had little signs. You know, old golfers never die. They just lose their, you fill in the blank. You know, cutesy things with a picture of a golfer looking for his And then there was the other stuff. Everything I like is either illegal, immoral, or fattening. Cute stuff, innocent, but true. There was a truth in that. Although today they're trying to make everything that's illegal, legal, and everything that's immoral, moral, and everything that's moral, immoral, and everything that's fattening, illegal as well. They're passed the law now that the government's going to now do a fat check on everybody in America. You hear this to see your fat level. What crazy people run this country. What schmucks. All the schmucks of the universities are now running the country. You wonder why the country's in trouble. Look at Putzes. They never built a business. They never provided a service anyone wanted. Schmeck, who couldn't get a job anywhere but in the university, suddenly they're business geniuses. You got to laugh at them, but they're dangerous. They're dangerous the way they meddle in things. They have no knowledge of it. They're all meddlesome. That's why we should talk instead about. At the turn of the hour, we have a man all of you are going to want to hear from. We have the exclusive interview with Lieutenant Colonel Chesani. He is coming on the show first today because after 3 hours of deliberation, the Military Board of Inquiry ruled that he was not guilty of misconduct and should not be demoted. However, they said Chesani must now retire because he displayed substandard performance by failing to conduct a more detailed investigation of the civilians killed as a result of the house-clearing actions of former Marines after they were ambushed in Haditha. Now, the whole case of Haditha was ginned up by Al-Qaeda along with Time magazine to say that our Marines committed a war crime. As a result, many Marines were court-martialed, including Chesani. You know I went to bat for them, especially Chesani. You know you gave a lot of money. I gave money. We raised money. And Thomas More Law Center did a great job. We're going to have Chesani on, Lieutenant Colonel Chesani, to tell his story at the turn of the hour. It's a very important story. But if you think it occurred under Obama, you're wrong. It occurred under your friend Bush. So let's go back to the really important stuff and talk about Gibson versus the Hollywood Ho. Kansas City, Kathleen, whose side are you on? Which side do you take? What do you think?
Thank you, Michael. I take Mel Gibson's side. I listen to the recordings, and it's just nothing but pain and suffering and regret and raw emotion. And I listen to her, and I think she set it up, and I think it's despicable. And my heart just really aches for him.
Well, now let's say this. He did threaten her. However, I believe the other side committed extortion. If it turns out that her lawyers were trying to get money out of him to not release these tapes, wouldn't that be considered extortion?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's blackmail. It would be blackmail.
Yeah, well, I don't know exactly what the lawyer is. Sounds like extortion to me. Either you give us X million or we'll release the tapes, and the lawyers say no, so they release the tapes, and that's what we're hearing now. That's all. Sacramento, Linnell, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Savage. They are both at fault. Neither one of them are in the right here. They used each other. But my ex-husband was like that, the panting, the roaring in rage, and it was anything and everything that could set him off, everything from inhaling fumes at the gas pump to some guy going too slow in front of him in traffic, you know, anything and everything. And, you know, that's pretty typical for people who, you know, are drug abusers and alcoholics. You know, they have kind of a hair trigger and they don't take responsibility for their own stuff. I think he blames her that everything's fallen apart. But it also, you know, you're a fan of scripture, as am I, and there's two scriptures that come to mind. Sow the wind and reap the whirlwind. And
oh, boy.
Big time.
Oh,
and,
amen. That's some proverb, that one.
And he's also learned that a man cannot take fire into his lap and not be burned.
Yes. Yes. Yes, it is true. There's so much like that, but none of us listen to the Bible. I mean, very few of us actually read it and believe it, except the very, very religious, and they're mocked in our amoral, a religious society. But there's a lot of truth in the Proverbs, especially. They're written by very wise men. If you don't believe in God and you don't believe in that sense of prophecy, well, you could just look at it as brilliant poetry, if you wish. He that is greedy of gain troubleth his own house, but he that hateth gifts shall live, whatever that means. You know, you can find it. He that is soon angry dealeth foolishly, and a man of wicked devices is hated. I don't know what that means. The language is a little tough for you know? It's a very tough language. You got to translate. It's like when I was in high school, there was a big debate about whether Shakespeare should still be taught. And I remember how surprised I was when an English teacher I really respected said, no, Shakespeare should not be taught because the kids don't even understand the language. Although it was brilliant at the time, it's too remote from the children to understand Shakespeare, and there's no need to read it anymore. Now, of course, many of you will object to that because the language is so remarkably amazing and all of that. On the other hand, you have to speak in the common tongue of the man and the woman listening to you. I know this better than you may imagine. You must speak the common language of the average person to be in talk radio, to be in the media at all. You can't start speaking in language that they don't want to hear or they're not used to hearing. They will not listen to you. And so you speak in these parables, I think people stop listening to you, you know? So I try to do it in my own way, whatever it is. And I'm not a moralist in any regard at all, you know? Here, look at this one. Men do not despise a thief if he steal to satisfy his soul when he is hungry. That's an amazing thing out of the Proverbs. Men do not despise a thief if he steal to satisfy his soul when he is hungry. You hear? In other words, a man starving and he robs a loaf of bread to feed his wife or children. Who's going to want to arrest a man like that? For on account of a harlot, a man is brought to a loaf of bread. How's that one? Does that work for the Gibson thing? To keep thee from the evil woman, from the smoothness of the alien tongue, lust not after her beauty in thy heart, neither let her captivate thee with her eyelids. For on account of a harlot, a man is brought to a loaf of bread, but the adulteress hunteth for the precious life. Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Now, that's an interesting one, too, because listen to that one. This is exactly Gibson. Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Or can one walk upon hot coals and his feet not be scorched? So that he goeth into his neighbor's wife, whosoever toucheth her shall not go unpunished. But listen to that. Can a man not take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? You understand that language. Much of what Shakespeare wrote, by the way, is on the level of biblical language. Or can one walk upon hot coals and his feet not be scorched? You know, it's funny. If you read the Buddhist tractates, there's a similar one. Is that he who goes around looking for affairs is like a man who walks with a candle in the wind. Eventually the flame will burn him. Same thing. I would think that any religion on earth teaches the same thing. Now, why did they teach? Why is so much about religion about controlling sexual urges? I want to think about that with you for a minute. I've been thinking about it. Why is so much about religion about controlling and constraining sexuality? Number one. And number two, why is this atheistic, amoral society so anti-religion? Precisely for the same reason that I asked the first question. The reason there's such an atheistic drive in this country is because it's all about sexuality. And because they were brainwashed with, if it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? Blah, blah, blah. Anyone who puts up a red light is an evil man to them. No good, evil, go to hell, who are you, old man, go away, I'll do what I want, blah, blah, blah. I'm a wild animal, you're nothing, get away from me, I hate you. So then they hate religion itself, then they hate the church, etc., and then they go after the Pope. At the end of the day, the stricter a religion is, the more it's hated by the Sybarites, if you want to call them that. I mean, there's 100 things you could call them. A Sybarite's a nice thing you could call them, but here it is. Here is the biblical... The Mel Gibson story is almost a biblical story come to life. I think that's why it's got life to it. That's why I'm spending an hour and a half on this today. Right? I'm telling you, this is really good stuff. I mean, I hope he survives this. I hope that if Mel Gibson is listening to this show, and he may be, you understand that your shame is overwhelming. You are burning in a hot flame right now of humiliation. Mr. Gibson, you're burning in the flames of humiliation right now, but we're not taking pleasure in it. Only a very sad person would take pleasure in your humiliation. Because this is humiliating to be exposed like this by a woman who set up to destroy him by recording him in his worst moments. Certainly you're not hearing him in his best moments. Are you hearing him with any passion for something good? No, because you wouldn't want to listen to that. Here's another one. You want to see with the Bible? Are you ready for this? Thou art snared by the words of thy mouth. Thou art caught by the words of thy mouth. Could you believe this? There are six things which the Lord hates, seven which are an abomination unto him: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that deviseth wicked thoughts, feet that are swift in running to evil, a false witness that breatheth out lies, and he that soweth discord among brethren. So, it's again the commandments. You're going to get back to that. Drink waters out of thine own cistern, and running waters out of thine own well. What does that mean? Let thy springs be dispersed abroad, and courses of water in the streets. Well, all right, some of it you can't understand, some of it is very earthy, and you can't understand it. But why is so much of religion about controlling sexual urges? I think it's a hell of a topic to discuss. In other words, we've been propagandized since the 60s that if you have an urge, act on it, or it will cause a disease otherwise. Isn't that what the crazy therapist movement has taught you? That repressed sexuality is the worst thing you can be living with? Is that not what they've been teaching now for 50, 60 years? It started with that crackpot. Who was that crackpot they did a movie about and they made him into something he wasn't? Kinsey. Kinsey, the sex maniac crackpot, who made the whole thing up. There were no tests. He made up the results. He imposed his own sexual deviance upon the world with his fake science. And it's been taken as fact. And so built upon this false science of Kinsey, we have the sexual revolution. Coming from the sexual revolution, we have the world we are now living in with the meltdown of the whole society. I truly believe that sexual control and sexual repression is the only way this society can survive. I swear to God, and believe me, I'm a sexual libertarian in that way. I've said that to you before. I think that there's a lot to be said for self-control in plain English. How about you? I'll be right back.
Savage.
All my friends are popping blues. It must be going round. I love you, baby, but I must be rhythm bound.
So we got Antenna Gate, we got Gibson Gate, we got the stock market falling again. And that's it. Life goes on. We have the professor in the White House surrounded by microcephalics who have never created a product anyone wanted, never run a business, but they're experts on trillion dollar spending. I love how they toss around numbers that the college teachers are now running the country. Oh, the budget's $29.2 million. Oh, we got $35.9 million in there. Unbelievable to me when you listen to these jerks. And here we are. We're the people. We're the people who provide them with everything they have. But we're lucky. We still live in a free country. We still live in a free country. You want to talk about Gibson? I don't know. It's sad already. I hope he's not listening at this point. Miami, Rafaela, welcome to the Savage Nation. Rafaela, welcome to the Savage Nation. Yes.
I just wanted to say that for somebody that sucked this poor man dry and for her to go and exploit him like that, she has to be the most cold-hearted person on this planet. She already got everything that she wanted out of him, so why does she have to go and do that?
I don't know. I think I believe by what I am hearing that she recorded these tapes without his knowledge, which, by the way, is illegal in California. Her lawyer, whoever the vermin may be, probably played them for Gibson's lawyer and they said, we want $5 million to not release them or whatever. And then Gibson said, go to hell, I'm not going to give in to your extortion, and they released them.
I completely agree that she did set him up, however, because the calmness that she has on these takes, it's just, there's no way that you can sit there while somebody is screaming at the top of their lungs. And you're just
right.
Like,
and come back with a calm statement. It sounds like it was intercut in order to provoke him, such as, you broke my teeth twice. That sounds like made up. Coming up next, Lieutenant Colonel Chisani, not guilty of the crimes that were laid upon him by the Bush administration. He'll join us right now for an exclusive interview in a few minutes.
Savage.
Bonasera. It is time to say goodnight to Napoli.
It is the Savage Nation. We've been talking about a human tragedy, the agony of Gibson. He was being set up by the girl he was living with. No question about it, he went over the edge, went crazy, said things that are maybe indictable. Maybe she extorted him. But now we get down to something far more important, far more serious. In August of 2005, a roadside bomb killed 14 U.S. Marines in Haditha, Iraq. Okay? What happens afterwards is on November 19, 2005, a Marine and 24 Iraqi civilians, quote-unquote, are killed in Haditha. February of 2006, a Time magazine left-wing reporter, Tim McGurk, contacts military sources in Baghdad, starts an inquiry in the military, and then in May of 2006, the despicable U.S. Representative John Murtha, the pig from Pennsylvania who recently died, speaks about a November 19th incident in Haditha, saying that our four troops killed innocent civilians in cold blood and compared them to Nazis. As a result, Marines are charged with murder. Charges of dereliction of duty are charged against Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Chassani. He was not even at the point of action. It goes on and on and on. On and on and on. We've talked about on this case for years. And on December 11th, after 3 hours of deliberation, the Military Board of Inquiry rules that Lieutenant Colonel Chassani was not guilty of misconduct and should not be demoted. Nevertheless, the board's ruling is a mixed result. It says Chassani, a certifiable war hero who has given most of his adult life to the United States government, must now retire because he, quote, displayed substandard performance by failing to conduct a more detailed investigation of the civilians killed as a result of the house-clearing actions of four Marines after they were ambushed in Haditha. Joining us now is Lieutenant Colonel Chassani. Welcome to the Savage Nation, and thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. I really appreciate you having me on today.
Well, we did everything we could for you, you know, in the sense of being civilians. How do you feel today with the decision of the board?
You know, Dr. Savage, I praise the Lord for taking care of me and my family. I'm thankful that I'm getting to retire, that I'm retired actually today. It was my last day of active duty in the Marine Corps, and I'll actually be retired on the 30th of September. And I'm just thankful that I'm where I am right now. And I got to tell you, I'm indebted to you and your listeners. You guys were just a tremendous blessing to me.
Colonel, listen, we're indebted to you. You were there. You were the one facing the bullets, not us. If the people don't defend our defenders, who will be there for us? What I don't understand is how, what I really don't understand, and I know that you're in a difficult situation. I wouldn't expect you to join me in my contempt for the forces within the military who did this to you, but they were talking about things that you never did. You weren't even at the point of the incident. Isn't that correct?
That's correct. That is. They were charging me with not, like you said, not properly investigating the whole thing. I just want to.
So they said, they basically said, we're not going to strip you of your pension and we're not putting you in prison, correct?
That is correct, Dr. Savage. They, as a result of all the outpouring from you all for the money and the moral support that you gave, you all made a difference in this case, and that was the finding. They said that my performance was substandard. I didn't expect them to do anything less. A two-star general had relieved me of command, and I did not expect that they would overrule what he had done to me, and if they would have said anything else, and that would have been overruling what he said. But it was good that they found no misconduct, even though it wasn't even like a court of law where you have to have a higher standard. It was a very low threshold for finding guilt. It was 51%. The rules of evidence didn't apply, and they still did not prove their case.
That's amazing. That's amazing. It's that weak. They can condemn a man with that weak a case of it. So I know you don't want to badmouth anybody. I can certainly understand the situation you're in. You're breathing a sigh of relief that it's all over and you can get on with your life. How many years did you give to this country as a military man?
Almost 23 years.
And this is the reward. How many years have they dragged? How many years have you been dragged through the hot coals, Colonel?
On this one, I think this. I guess January of 2006 is really when this really started coming to light, like you said, and so more than 4 years.
4 years of hell. So it's taken a tremendous toll, I would imagine, on yourself and your family. Yeah, the people were for you, but my God, what are you going to do with your life now? Do you know yet?
I don't. I got to tell you, not that I am Jonah, but by any stretch, I feel like Jonah today. I was when I got my DD-214 and my orders that gave me an honorable discharge. I felt like that through all this, God has given me a second chance. I don't know what I'm going to do yet. I know we're going to spend some time with our family, with my wife's family. We've been away from them for 12 years, and we're just going to spend some time with them and really spend some time with my family, just to my immediate family, with my kids and my wife, just to get on solid ground.
Colonel, of the 8 Marines initially charged in the so-called incident, 6 Marines, including yourself, had criminal charges dismissed and one was acquitted. Only one Marine still faces criminal charges. Who is that individual?
That's Staff Sergeant Frank Witterich.
He's still facing the potential of jail time?
He is. His hearing is scheduled to start, I believe, on September 13th, if I'm not mistaken.
And is the Thomas More Law Center representing him as well?
No, they're not. I want to say Mr. Neil Puckett is representing him.
Oh, I had that attorney on. Yeah, well, we'll do the best we can to help him as well.
Appreciate that.
Look, I don't want to go back over old history here, but what did they say was not done right? In the house clearing? What are they talking about?
Forget about it.
I don't want to drag. I know what they're talking about.
Right.
They were saying that you're in the middle of a firefight. You're in the middle of a zone where people are being whacked by roadside bombs. You're a U.S. Marine, and you're supposed to have your men go in there and clear a house where terrorists are hiding behind women. And the standard rules of operation, wasn't it to throw stun grenades into that room before entering and then spray the room with machine gun fire to avoid the soldiers getting killed themselves?
That's true. That's how you make entries into rooms after... If you suspect or you believe or you're under fire, yes, sir, that's what you do.
Right. But so how could they then, after the fact, say that you didn't... Those rules are clearly written that at the time. Those are the rules of engagement, correct?
Right. Right.
All right. So then they say after the fact, what they want you to do, go in there with a camel burger and offer them some pita bread to police come out with the roadside bomb?
No, sir. No, I'm not...
No, I'm not trying to make something as serious as this into something silly. But it seems to me that this is a case that never should have been brought against you and these other men to begin with. You're all heroes as far as we're concerned.
I really appreciate that, Dr. Savage. I really do.
Well, I don't want to drag you back in history. I think you want to look forward. Something tells me that that's where you'd rather go is look forward. Yep. And I hope you can put your life back together again. I'm only glad that you got your pension. That's what I was worried about because, Boy, this is a bad situation for a man who put so many years into the military, isn't it?
It was, and again, I just thank you for you personally committing to my case and financially supporting me, morally supporting me. I thank you for enabling the Thomas More Center to fight for me. I tell you, I was just blessed to have the attorneys that I had. Rob Muse was just, he's a warrior. I had Captain Jeff King and Lieutenant Colonel John Shelburne and Brian Rooney. I know you know Brian Rooney running for Congress.
Yes.
I was so blessed to have... just a great team of attorneys in my corner in the Thomas More Law Center. It was just...
Colonel, now that you see what you've gone through, there's another young man, and I don't want to drag you into this, but there's a man named Michael Behenna.
Right.
And this man is an Army Ranger who is sitting in Fort Leavenworth right now with a 20-year sentence for in a very similar situation in some ways. And I would like to see if we can help him as well. I mean, I'm going to devote a lot of time to this again now. People can go on to michaelsavage.com and see what happened to him. How,
right, I saw that this is, there was a gentleman that had exculpatory evidence for him, and the government sent him away and didn't allow him to testify, and I thought that was pretty disgraceful.
Let me ask a general question, and I'll let you go. I don't want to make you uncomfortable in any way, Colonel, but in the history of the modern military, has there ever been a time when active duty soldiers and Marines were so put on the defensive by their own government as in the current time? And I don't mean just under President Obama. Has there ever been a time when men in the combat zone have had to fight with such rules of engagement, with such scrutiny?
I am not sure about that. I would probably say no, there hasn't been. I would say that the rules of engagement have gotten scrutinized more in the last several years than in any time in our history, probably.
Well, it's going to take a historian to put this in context, but my gut tells me that they put you fellas into a no-win situation, and I know that if they were in the situation, the people who condemned you, I doubt that they could have come up to the standards that you yourself you know, exhibited in plain English. How far away were you personally from Haditha at the time of this incident? Where were you actually?
I was actually in my combat operations center watching what was going on with unmanned aerial vehicles, so we could see, not in the houses obviously, but we could see terrorists leaving the actual scene, and we tracked them, and we actually ended up destroying them and killing those terrorists that came from the scene where the initial engagement was.
Hmm. Well, I hear your children in the background. I'd rather you spend quality time with them instead of with me. So all I can say is thank you for your service to America. You're our hero. And I know personally I'm speaking for the thousands of people who contributed to your defense fund. God bless you for all you've given this country. I only wish the country gave you back more than they did.
Thank you very much, Dr. Savage. And again, I just want to say thank you to you and the Thomas More Law Center and the fine Americans that sacrificed and gave of their own means to make sure that my family and I were taken care of. And I just really appreciate you heralding our case for us.
Colonel, when you're out in San Francisco, if you ever come to Sodom and Gomorrah, it's still a beautiful place. I'd like to take you and your wife and your children to dinner up in an area that I like very much. We'll have a great Italian meal. We'll celebrate with really solid Americans. I hope you come out here one day because I'd like that opportunity.
I appreciate that, Dr. Savage.
Okay, we'll make it happen once things settle down. Thank you very much for being with us on the program today.
Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you. Well, again, that was Lieutenant Colonel Chassani. Those of you who know what we're talking about know, and those of you who don't will never. However, we have an active case of a man behind bars, an Army Ranger, Central Casting American hero by the name of Lieutenant Behenna, Michael Behenna, who is rotting in prison right now. Rotting in prison again, in my opinion, on false charges put upon him by fat old cowards sitting behind desks in Washington. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, we civilians have an obligation to help our men in uniform. And, I mean, what can I say to you? If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be sitting here, nor would you be listening to me. We'd be living in, half of us wouldn't be alive at all. We would have lost the war to the Nazis. We'd have a different universe. And now we're facing a different kind of enemy, perhaps even more insidious than the Nazis. And there are plenty of them right in this country getting away with murder and planning murder. And that's because of the spinelessness of the government. And this government, the current government, is really not the first one that has catered to these enemies within. And we, the people, are the ones who know it. You look at the last four almost terrorist incidents in America. Every one of them was stopped either by accident or by a civilian, not by the government. Think about that. And now you have men on the front lines in combat facing the bullets, facing the bombs, and the minute they do their job, a vermin from the media says, oh, you went over the line. And the next thing you know, they find a Jack Murtha who says that they're Nazis. And the next thing you know, the guy's life is on hold, or worse, or he's in a prison cell. So I feel we have an obligation to help them when they get in trouble. And, you know, even though I have my own troubles right now with England, and I do, and I'm still fighting for it, whether you know it or not, and many of you have received the emails and all of that, and thank you for your donations overnight. I want to thank you, okay? I still think I have an obligation to help others. This is not the only case on earth. Shame on those who won't go to bat for Chassani. They're the same people who wouldn't go to bat for me, by the way. Oh, they love to wrap themselves in the red, white, and blue. They love to make millions of dollars a year pretending that they're patriots. But when it comes down to either freedom of speech or the real First Amendment issue, they're not there. Nobody from Fox News, none of the skirts, none of the pants, none of them. I don't want to get into the anger. I do have plenty of it, but I'm not Mel Gibson and I'm not drunk right now. I could really unleash right now on the people in the media who didn't come to my aid and still want to pretend I don't exist. I have things I like to say about them, but I'm not going to waste my time. I'd rather thank those who did. I'd rather thank those of you who wrote the few articles. I can count them on one hand. And the people in the media who had me on the shows, I can count them on the other hand. I want to thank those of you. That's all. The few righteous people in the world, that's all that matters. That's all that ever did matter. But for God's sake, stop being misled by these schmucks who are walking around with, I'm a conservative. Yeah, put the Republicans back in power and all will be well. You schmucks, you really believe that? It was under a Republican president, by the way, George Bush, that Chesani was crucified with rules of engagement that were impossible to follow. And they've only gotten even worse under President Obama. So we the people have an obligation to defend those who defend us, or else there'll be no one left to defend us. It's the same with the police, by the way. You know that I've given money to police who've gotten into trouble, who I felt were innocent. I've never heard from them afterwards. I don't expect to hear from them afterwards anymore. So I was quite pleasantly surprised when I heard from the Thomas More Law Center that Colonel Chesani would be free today and I would be the first show he would go on because he had promised me. They promised me he would. You know what? They were true to their word. How many people in this world are true to their word? I'm sure that they would like to have given the story exclusively to Wallbanger. Wallbanger loves this kind of story, or the professor with the glasses on his nose, who became a charlatan televangelist today about miracles about to happen. Sure, they would love to wrap themselves, the flag around themselves, but I'm glad he came to this show first because many of you contributed money. And that's why I say, maybe I have my own problems, but they're nothing compared to what he was facing. Believe me, they could have put this guy in jail and stolen his pension after 23 years of duty to this country. Think about that one. It's not just the talk shows not allowed to go to England for the fine cuisine and the dental work that they're so famous for. You know, think about how I'm being denied the British medical system. That people say, what do you miss about England? Well, it's the fish and chips, the cuisine, you know, the haggis from Scotland that I can't have. I've always loved sheep intestines. I mean, I can't wait to eat that stuff. That's really the cuisine of choice. Haggis, you know, bad beer, bad cars, people with big teeth. I just can't wait to go there. I mean, I wish I'm off the list. Can't wait to go over to merry old England. You know, they're living in an age of everything that the liberals warned us about, they have done. Thought crimes. I'm accused of a thought crime. Although you said these things and you didn't hurt anybody, we think that your thoughts are so dangerous that we don't want you in our country. Everything the illegitimate lying left warned us about, I am the victim of. But where are the liberals when I need them? Nowhere, because they're liars. Where's the ACLU? I'll tell you where the ACLU is. They're not here for me, those liars. You know, you liberals, many of you are good-natured, but you're very gullible. You're naive. You actually think that the perverts in the ACLU care about freedom and the First Amendment. How come they haven't taken my case to England? I'll tell you what case they did take, these vermin in the ACLU. There is a Stolen Valor Act, the federal law, that makes it illegal to lie about being a war hero. Today, a judge, so-called, Robert Blackburn in Colorado, took the case that was brought to him by the ACLU of Colorado and said that this Stolen Valor Act is flawed and unconstitutional. And it means that the man, Rick Glenn Stanloff, who claimed he was an ex-Marine, who was wounded in Iraq and received the Purple Heart and Silver Star, but was never in the military, who was charged with violating the Stolen Valor Act, was defended by these vermin in the ACLU. And this so-called judge, Robert Blackburn, said that he has a right to lie. He has a right to pretend he's a war hero. So ask yourself why the ACLU would take the case of this piece of garbage and not take the case of Michael Savage. And then ask yourself why you give them 10 cents. Ask yourself why people who pulled the biggest bank fraud in American history gave them $9 million a few years ago. I'll tell you more about the people in California. Good liberals. The biggest bank fraud in history gave them money.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Listen up.
medication.
What? What?
You need medication.
I need a woman! Not a little girl with a dysfunctional. I need a woman! I don't need medication. You need a bat in the side of the head. Alright? How about that? You need a doctor. You need a brain transplant.
Notes for today are, women, do you think Mel Gibson was set up? Do you feel sympathy, not for Mel Gibson's words, certainly, but for the situation he's gotten himself into? Have you ever been set up by someone who was trying to bait you into saying something you'd later regret on the telephone? And do you believe the Gibson tapes have been edited to take his remarks out of context and condemn him? And what should Mel Gibson do right now? What should his career path be? Were you surprised to hear that Whoopi Goldberg has also defended Mel Gibson, saying he was not a racist? Why do you think both Michael Savage and Whoopi Goldberg have come to Gibson's defense? And I don't know the woman. Never met the woman. She's on this left-wing woman show that I never watch. I find it repugnant. But she's a friend of his, and she's doing the right thing. She's standing up for a friend. Is it a military board of inquiry rules that Lieutenant Colonel Chassani is not guilty of misconduct? Isn't that nice of them? After 3 hours of deliberation, the Military Board of Inquisition ruled that Lieutenant Colonel Chassani was not guilty of misconduct and should not be demoted. Nevertheless, the board's ruling produced a mixed result. It ruled Chassani must now retire because he displayed substandard performance by failing to conduct a more detailed investigation of the civilians killed as a result of the house-clearing actions of four Marines after they were ambushed in Haditha, Iraq on November 19, 2005. Now, the fact of the matter is, this is a long story and we've helped him a lot. The government went after him because they're going after any soldier who actually does his job. Of the eight Marines initially charged in this incident, six Marines, including Chassani, had criminal charges dismissed and one was acquitted. Only one Marine still faces criminal charges. The important thing for you to know is that this entire sad event started because of the reporting of one newspaper reporter, Timothy McGurk, of Time magazine, who took the word of an Al-Qaeda operative who told him that there had been a civilian massacre. And take a look at the devastation it has wrought within our military. Nevertheless, I gave him money. You gave Chassani money. We backed up this incredible man. And thank God, there's somewhat justice at last. It never should have happened to begin with. He should have been given a medal rather than a dismissal. But that's the new military. And by the way, this didn't start under Obama, for those of you who like to blame Obama. Chassani was found guilty of this crime before he even began. By the way, he wasn't even in Haditha. He was in a kind of way back behind the lines. In a command center. He didn't even know what was going on, and yet they went after him. This happened under your good friend George Bush. Republicans good, Democrats bad. Or is it Republicrats? Well, whatever you want to say.
Sad story.
We'll keep talking about this and other topics on the show today, but let's stop for a minute. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. Now, this week, it's important you know that we talked about the Fairness Doctrine has been made law by the New World Order. What do we mean by that? Well, the travel ban against Michael Savage. That's right. When England banned Michael Savage from coming to the UK, it has everything to do with silencing the opponents of the New World Order. In essence, I am a test case. The New World Order has chosen to see if they can get away with destroying the freedom of speech of Michael Savage. Thus far, they have. And they've decided to do this not by acting openly and passing a law, but by silencing the proponents of free speech one at a time. You see, there would be too much opposition if they launched a frontal assault and tried to silence all the media at the same time. So they've chosen a stealth attack using me to see if they could get away with silencing a major media figure in America. And so far they've gotten away with it. Now you say, well, what is this about? just remember this. I am the only member of the Western media banned from entering a Western nation. Why is this happening? Because the media in this country refuses to help. They'd rather talk about a baseball team, a Polish child molester, a slut in Hollywood, you name it. Anything but this horrible situation about the abuse of power of England. And the fewer who stand up to this United Kingdom ban and its destruction of free speech, the more the power of the New World Order will grow. That's one man's opinion.
All the stories have been told.
Michael Savage! We with you, bro! We got your back! We're gonna stand with you! We'll show them over there with their stiff upper lips. We'll show them a thing or two right here, right now!
Savage.
Yeah.
Oh, little girl of mine.
Yeah.
Do you sure look fine?
Joining us now with an exclusive Savage Nation report is Eric Stackelbeck.
Hey, Michael, always great to be here. Well, we're still picking up the pieces here in Washington, D.C., of what was a pretty much a non-eventful meeting between the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and President Obama last week. Now, basically, Michael, as you know, coming into this meeting, there was a lot of hype. You know, how's it going to go? After the March meeting, when Prime Minister Netanyahu was ushered unceremoniously out a side door of the White House, wasn't even granted the courtesy of a joint press conference with Obama, and was basically, by all accounts, blasted by the president, shunned. Obama even left the meeting to go eat dinner with his family, didn't offer Netanyahu any food, any dinner. It was a disaster, the March meeting, to say the least, and the demands being put on Israel were just ridiculous. Now, by all accounts, the goal of this latest meeting was to heal the rift, so to speak. And look, in public, kind of, I hate to say it, a dog and pony show, let's face it. The rift, they said all the right things on the surface. You know, Obama saying how committed he is to Israel, and it's an unbreakable bond, and that's great. But actions speak louder than words. And Obama, since he's taken office, has been the most anti-Israel president this country has ever seen. Now, Jimmy Carter, of course, after he left office, has become very anti-Israel. But Obama, I think, is a kindred spirit of Jimmy Carter. And really, I consider him an adversary of the Jewish state, Michael. I really do.
Why do you say that?
It's really amazing. All of Obama's actions over the past year and a half have led me to believe that this guy is anti-Israel. It's pretty obvious. And the funny thing here is, Michael, with all the pressure he's been putting on Israel, all the outrageous demands that Israel give up territory, Israel give up half of Jerusalem, sacrifice their security and basically let Iran go nuclear is the message that Obama is delivering to Netanyahu in these meetings. Amid all of that, the funny thing is the so-called peace process with the Palestinians has been set back about 20 years, even before 93 when we had the Oslo peace process, which was ultimately doomed. The Palestinians and the Israelis right now are not having direct talks for the first time in about 20 years. So Obama has taken a bad situation with his hardline stance against Israel and his coddling of the Palestinians in the Muslim world. He's taken a bad situation and made it 1,000 times worse, and with his pressure on Israel has sent a message to the Palestinians, Hamas and Mahmoud Abbas and the Palestinian Authority, that they can play hardball and try and wring more concessions out of Israel. His Middle East policy has been a disaster, has Obama's, on all fronts. And the big elephant in the room, Michael, during this Netanyahu-Obama speech, and hey, it's great that in public, at least, they are presenting, you know, a positive face to the world, because we need to present a united front right now to the radical Islamic world and have them at least think that on the surface, the U.S. and Israel are on the same page.
Right, right, right.
The last thing we want our Islamist enemies, chiefly Iran, which is driving towards a nuclear bomb, to think is that the U.S. and Israel have deep rifts. And I have news for you. They do have deep rifts. But at least in public, let's put on the facade that they don't. Obama obviously didn't do that in March when he completely shunned Netanyahu. It was good that it was done this time around. But the big elephant in the room, Michael, in this whole meeting between Bibi and Obama again, and they didn't really discuss this too in depth in their press conference afterwards, the Iran nuclear threat. Look, Admiral Mullen, the Joint Chief of Staff, CIA Director Leon Panetta, both recently said that sanctions, economic sanctions, even tough economic sanctions, will not stop Iran from developing a nuclear bomb, and they agree that it will happen within 2 years. Now, that's the bottom line. The Obama administration, based on everything I've seen, will not take military action against Iran. There's absolutely no plans to take military action against Iran. You know, Senator Joe Lieberman was actually in Jerusalem recently and said, hey, we're reserving the military option, and, you know, we will take it if sanctions don't work. That's Joe Lieberman. God bless him. If that's true, that would be great, but I'm sure he's not speaking for the Obama administration, to say the least. So what we have is Iran driving towards a nuclear weapon, and we have Middle Eastern states, Michael, who are petrified of this looming threat of a nuclear-armed Shiite Iran. We just had the ambassador to the U.S. from the United Arab Emirates, the UAE, publicly endorsing a U.S. military strike against Iran. This is amazing. An Arab leader in a Gulf state, the UAE, publicly endorsing military action against Iran's nuclear facilities by the U.S. Now, he later backtracked on that statement, but it gave you a glimpse into how worried the Gulf states like Kuwait, like the United Arab Emirates, are about this looming nuclear Iran, and that's not even to mention Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Michael, I speak to Arab government officials often, and I had a really interesting conversation a few months ago with a guy. We sat down to talk about Al-Qaeda. We ended up spending about 90% of our conversation on Hezbollah and the threat of a nuclear Iran. So that gave me a window into the mindset of Sunni Arab leaders right now across North Africa, in Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, in the Gulf states like Kuwait, UAE. They're all petrified of the looming threat of Iran developing nuclear weapons. And I have to say, if and when Israel strikes, Michael, the happiest people in the world will be in Riyadh, Cairo, and Amman. They'll all condemn Israel publicly, but in private, they'll be mopping the sweat from their brows and thanking Allah that Israel took action.
Oh, I see.
Now, switching gears a bit, Michael, speaking of Iran and then speaking of Hezbollah, we had a recent death of a longtime Islamic jihadist spiritual leader by the name of Muhammad Hussein Fadlallah. Now, this was a guy, he was based in Beirut in Lebanon, was a Shiite cleric, had been a spiritual leader of Hezbollah in years past, very bad guy. The U.S. designated him as a specially designated global terrorist. He's a guy who gave his blessing to the 1983 Marine barracks bombing in Beirut, carried out by Hezbollah with Iranian backing, killed 241 U.S. servicemen. Fadlallah endorsed that. He's endorsed the destruction of Israel. He's endorsed suicide bombings. Very bad guy, to say the least. Kind of parted ways with Hezbollah, apparently, during the 1990s, because he was jealous that Iran's supreme leader was kind of the spiritual leader in Lebanon. Fadlallah wanted to be that guy. He had a lot of pride in his standing as a Shiite cleric. Here's the deal. Fadlallah died, good riddance, jihadist, scumbag, he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
But we had, number one, and this gives you a window into the mainstream media's treatment of the Middle East, we had a CNN correspondent. This is fascinating. CNN correspondent for the Middle East, Octavia Nasser. Well, she opened a Twitter account, Michael, and after Fadlallah's death, she tweets the following. Sad to hear of the passing of Sayyid Mohammed Hussein Fadlallah, one of Hezbollah's giants I respect a lot. End quote. Unbelievable, to say the least. Now, she quickly was criticized, you know, throughout the United States by the Anti-Defamation League, by the Simon Wiesenthal Center, etc. She comes out with a blog saying, look, I didn't mean his whole, you know, trying to backtrack, saying, look, I didn't mean his whole career. I just meant he was in support of women's rights. Apparently, Fadlallah was a great champion of women's rights in the Muslim world. But I thought that was fascinating, and I said to some coworkers, that explains a lot, because every time you watch some kind of conflict in the Middle East, whether it was the Gaza campaign in 2009 where Israel hit back against Hamas, or 2006 in Lebanon, where Israel hit back against Hezbollah, or this past about a month ago with this Turkish flotilla incident where Israel killed 9 terrorists off the coast of Gaza. Each time, Michael, when I watched CNN, I had to literally scream at the TV about the biased anti-Israel coverage. It was really outrageous. Now we see where this is coming from. Number two, another revealing aspect about Fadlallah's death in Dearborn, Michigan, which is a heavily, heavily Shiite Muslim area. It actually has the largest Arab population in the U.S. In Dearborn, after Fadlallah's death, Michael, 3 large mosques in the United States, in Dearborn, Michigan, held big ceremonies commemorating Hussein Fadlallah.
That's crazy.
To say that's troubling, I think, is an understatement right here on American soil. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. We know we have a network of Hezbollah supporters here in the U.S., and who knows how they'll react once Iran's military facilities, hopefully, are taken out, and taken out, most likely, by Israel.
Thanks for the report, Eric.
Michael, thanks again. Always a pleasure.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Riding along in my automobile, my baby beside me at the wheel. I stole a kiss at the turn of a mile, my curiosity running wild.
And his weekly report here is James Herson.
As we all know, a new coalition government led by this new Prime Minister, David Cameron of the UK, has decided to continue preventing you from entering that country. So you remain on this ridiculous list of 16 banned people that includes terrorists and neo-Nazis and former KKK members and white supremacists. So what does it mean when someone suffers a form of punishment, which is what banishment is, merely for things that are said on a radio show? I mean, the ban continues basically because of your political opinions and your opposition to illegal immigration, which, ironically, is the policy of this new coalition government in the UK. They've adopted the savage policy.
Exactly.
The savage ban, you know, has been widely condemned by those on all sides of the political spectrum. This Home Secretary Alan Johnson, you know, the one who took the place of this previous Home Secretary, I don't even want to mention her name, the one that created the list, Alan Johnson called banning you a blunder. And he announced about a year ago that he was going to lift the ban. The mayor of London, Boris Johnson, wrote, "America still has a constitutional protection of free speech. And I have been amazed," he wrote, "to see how few people in this country," meaning the UK, "are willing to stick up for that elementary principle." He went on to describe the UK. He said the UK is a country once famous for free speech and now is hysterically and expensively sensitive to anything that could be taken as a slight. A column in the left-wing UK newspaper, The Guardian, contained perhaps the strongest language.
What did it say?
It said, quote, "The ban on Savage is so far from being a comprehensible act, so staggeringly capricious and stupid as to defy evaluation." Well, this incomprehensible and staggeringly capricious act needs to be evaluated a little bit now that it's been continued. What we've got here is government interference with free speech using that concept called hate speech. And hate speech, of course, refers to that Orwellian set of laws, proposed laws or legislation that is used to silence critics of government's so-called social policies. These are in the name of tolerance and sensitivity and political correctness. Using these hate speech laws, governments in Europe and particularly Britain have created a fascistic environment that attempts to basically police people's thoughts.
Unbelievable.
And the result is appalling. Clergy get arrested for reading Bible passages, and people are persecuted for expressing their opinions. And in the UK, this has become a trend.
Well, like what?
In 2002, there was a television personality named Robin Page. He was making a speech, and he said farmers ought to have the same rights as Muslims and gays. He was arrested by the police, held in a jail cell, charged with hate speech.
What? No.
Page fought for 5 long years, a one-man campaign to clear his name, and a court finally restored his reputation in 2008. And eventually, this will happen for you too, Michael. In 2006, a student was arrested for calling, get this, a mounted policeman's horse gay. This was in the UK. A 14-year-old schoolgirl was arrested that same year in 2006 for refusing to work with a group of Asians during a science tutorial, some sort of science fair, because none of them spoke English.
Hmm.
Hate speech laws are being proposed and passed in this country, and this kind of legislation masquerades as being for the purpose of protecting minorities, but in reality, it's aimed at crushing all of our free speech. Back in the 80s and in the 90s, and even recently, hundreds of public universities adopted what they called speech codes, regulating discriminatory speech by faculty and students. That was in this country. And some of these codes haven't fared well in the courts, overturned because of First Amendment violations. But now they have this new anti-harassment code, which covers discriminatory speech, which quells free speech as well. Look, when there are punitive measures that are doled out by governments and it's given for people expressing their political opinions, that's the antithesis of free speech. And look, totalitarianism and free speech cannot mutually coexist. We just have to look at history. Despots detest freedom of expression, especially from someone like you, Michael, who can distribute it to a wide audience.
Exactly.
And whenever we see changes in media technology, it provides new opportunities for freedom of speech, and it threatens dictatorial power. Because we look at history, whenever media technology progressed and allowed more people to read or hear opposing views, despots reacted by suppressing free speech. It happened with the printing press. I mean, the printing press was perceived by the monarchies in the world as a threat to their power. The French crown repressed printing, and they burned a printer named Dolé at the stake in the 16th century, in 1546. In 1557, the British crown limited the right to print to members of a monarchy-controlled guild. I mean, it was kind of like their version of a public union. 30 years later, the Star Chamber was set up primarily to curtail what the crown then called abuses in the selling of books. In 1637, printers fled Britain, moved to the Netherlands. I guess they were banned. And there were about 800 authors, printers, and book dealers who were incarcerated in the Bastille in Paris before it was stormed in 1789.
Hmm.
When the electronic copier, you know, like a Xerox machine, was invented, it frightened the power-mad despots of the world. I mean, the possession and the use of copy machines was tightly controlled by the Soviet Union. People distributing pamphlets, books, magazines, and the like threatened the power of the state. So if somebody copied the wrong materials that are on a banned list, the KGB would be knocking at their door if they found out. Foreign media sources were never allowed in the old Soviet Union. Only Pravda, the communist-approved newspaper, was not on their banned list. Stalin even banned people technologically from pictures. You know, he condemned his enemies in those kangaroo court show trials, but any publicly used photographs were altered to remove people who Stalin had banned, well, banned from the picture, and eventually banned from living, period, from the earth. Ultimately banned also from the public mind.
True.
In 1644, when the Parliament of England had reintroduced government licensing of printers, John Milton wrote this: "Give me the liberty to know, to utter, and to argue freely according to conscience above all liberties." Another quote is frequently cited to describe the principle of freedom of speech. It's this one: "I disapprove of what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it." It was coined by Evelyn Hall in a biography of Voltaire. We have now progressed to advocates of authoritarian government trying to get their tentacles into other technologies, the new technologies of today, cable, the internet, and yes, even talk radio. Your talk radio, Michael, the Savage Nation. Look, today, freedom of speech is most brilliantly set forth in the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. But it's also in those international human rights documents that the left reveres, like the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, which describes the right to freedom of speech as, quote, "the right to hold opinions without interference." You know, banning someone from entering a nation is interference indeed. Thanks, Michael, for continuing to fight this blatant injustice. Back to you, my friend.
Thanks for the report, James.
Savage.
Take good care of my baby. Please don't ever make her blue. Just tell her that you love her.
Today we're going to talk about a number of things, including the passion of Mel Gibson.
You say and do. Take good care of my baby.
Many years ago, there used to be a statement about passion that went with the joke. It said, "A night with Venus, a lifetime with Mercury." That was a joke. And what it implied was that men would sometimes be with a woman who had syphilis. They would get syphilis, and then the men would have to be treated with mercury for syphilis, you know, a night with Venus, a lifetime with mercury. But it was later found out that mercury is a toxic metal, and it destroyed and killed brain cells and caused other neurological disorders. One of the most notable men to die from mercury poisoning was the writer Jack London, who allegedly died of mercury poisoning as a result of one night with Venus, who had syphilis. That's why they said a night with Venus and a lifetime with mercury. Well, looking at the Mel Gibson situation, we can say it's a night with Venus and a lifetime with acrimony. Now, although acrimony is not a planet, it's a universe of strife. And for Mel Gibson, it seems to be it's strife for life. A night with Venus, a lifetime with acrimony. Don't say I didn't warn you, gentlemen. You know, Mel Gibson has been attacked in the media for saying some horrendous, horrible things on tape to his girlfriend. But we have to ask ourselves what the circumstances were under which this tape was recorded.
You have no soul. You can't give a f-. I left my wife because we had no spiritual common ground. You and I have none. Zero. You won't even try.
You just enjoy insulting me, that's all.
Now, does he sound like a violent racist or a man whose life has been destroyed by alcohol? Does he sound like a wounded animal?
Out of this relationship if you're a good woman and you love me. What? I don't believe you anymore.
What am I... What did...
Relationship ever worked with you? No!
One second.
I'm behaving like this because I know absolutely that you do not love me and you treat me with no consideration.
One second, please. Can I please
speak? I love you because I treated you with
life.
No.
Every consideration to
no.
reject it. You
I'm
would
sorry.
Never be happy.
Mel Gibson is hurt. He's lashing out through an alcohol-induced haze. And I believe he was set up by this hoe. Listen to her voice.
Don't you dare hang up on me.
I can't listen to this anymore.
You hang up, I'm coming over there.
I'll call the police.
What?
I'll call the police.
You. I'm coming to my house. You're in my house, honey.
Yes, but you, honey, don't call me, honey. You just call
You're
me.
In my house.
It's...
So I'll call the police and tell them there's someone in my house. How about that?
You can do that. That's fine.
You. I don't involve the police in anything because I stand up for myself. You weak. You call the cops.
Oh, she knew what she was doing the entire time.
I don't give a damn about my music, and I don't give a damn about you spending another penny. I'm saving her life.
Yeah, well, you're awful angry for this.
You almost killed us. Did you forget?
Last 3 years has been a gravy train.
You were hitting a woman with a child in her hands. You, what kind of man is that? Hitting a woman when she's holding a child in her hand, breaking her teeth twice in the face. What kind of man is that?
No, you're all angry now.
You're going to get to, you know what? You're going to answer one day, boy, you're going to answer.
Huh?
Bet.
What are you threatening?
Nothing, nothing. I'm not the one to threaten.
I'm threatening. I'll put you in a rose garden, you. You understand that? Because I'm capable of it. You understand that?
It's a truly tragic situation. But what's really kind of tragically disgusting is the prospect of sex education for kindergartners in Montana. Here's a parent who's upset about it.
You know, right now my reaction to the lack of somebody that stepped up and said the age appropriateness of this has been established by X, and X's qualifications are more so right now it seems that the material's been introduced and the people that brought the curriculum together as a group decided, well, at this point, it's age-appropriate, and we really haven't seen where that age-appropriateness comes from.
Here are some of the headlines on MichaelSavage.com. Michael Savage and Whoopi Goldberg stick up for Mel Gibson. Strange bedfellows. Robin of Berkeley, the scapegoating of Michael Savage. Get the Dr. Savage ringtones. Read Jeffrey Kuhner's great article on the conservative ban on Michael Savage, where he says, radical Islam has won a major victory in its war with the West. It did not take place on the battlefield. No bomb was detonated. Hostages were not taken. It's unbelievably well written. There's going to be mandatory obesity rating for every American under the new Health and Human Services. Mandatory obesity rating. That's amazing. I mean, what will the government of Obama think of next? They're also giving free preventive care. There's no such thing as a free lunch, nor is there such thing as free medical care. They're going to bankrupt us even further. They're going to cover preventive services without charge. No co-pays, nothing. British Petroleum admits it lobbied the government over the release of the Lockerbie bomber. Europe warns Obama the relationship is not working. Oil stopped gushing into the Gulf of Mexico. A Canadian Muslim mother who strangled her daughter will not be jailed.
Oh, Jesus.
A Canadian judge's decision to free a devout Muslim mother convicted of strangling her 14-year-old daughter with a headscarf has prompted growing outrage. Did you read the story? It's on MichaelSavage.com. Yeah, I'm telling you, we're living in an insane world. There was leniency for a Muslim mother who strangled a 14-year-old daughter with a scarf. No jail time. Could you believe this? It's unbelievable. Why did it happen? Well, why'd she strangle a daughter? Well, let's look into it. Let's look into it. The woman was acquitted in October of second-degree murder and found guilty of manslaughter in the death of a 14-year-old daughter. The judge placed her on probation for 3 years with several conditions, including taking grief counseling. You see, she was charged after the incident when her daughter refused to go to court to be sentenced for assaulting a female teaching at school. The mother, who was Muslim, claimed the daughter lunged at her with a knife in her sewing room, where she prayed several times a day. She said she reacted by wrapping the scarf around her daughter's neck and told the girl twice to put the knife down before she lost consciousness. A knife was later found in the room, but the girl's fingerprints were not on it. So you see, some people are more equal than others, especially some Muslim people in Canada. Christians and Jews need not apply for such justice.
No sympathy for Mel Gibson, but sympathy for this person?
And here's one last story on michaelsavage.com. You can still buy one copy of Banned in Britain right on my website. And the terrorist-loving lib lawyer, Lynn Stewart, was originally sentenced to 28 months for helping a Muslim cleric behind bars. But a federal appeals court asked the judge to review the role of terrorism in her case and whether she lied when she testified at her trial. And today he threw the book at her. It went from 28 months to 10 years. So the liberals finally got one between the eyes. That's the only good news I've seen today. Lynn Stewart, terrorist-loving lib lawyer, gets 10-year sentence. Hail Mary.
Savage.